Yesterday featured two great NFL conference championships, which set the stage for the Super Bowl in 2 weeks. The Indianapolis Colts beat the New York Jets, so they return to the Super Bowl. And the New Orleans Saints make their first appearance in the Super Bowl. They beat the Minnesota Vikings. It was such a great weekend for quarterbacks, we thought we'd check in with a very good former NFL quarterback, Joe Theismann, formerly of the Washington Redskins, nowadays host of Playbook on the NFL Network. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Robert. I appreciate that.
I want you to talk, first of all, about the quarterbacks we saw in that AFC Championship game, Peyton Manning and Mark Sanchez.
You had two completely different individuals. One is a four-time MVP of the league and a Super Bowl champion. And then the other one is a young man who's just played his 18th football game. So you were at both ends of the spectrum in that game. And the Colts obviously rely so much on Peyton to be able to carry them, and he does such a great job carrying them on his shoulders. And then you have Mark Sanchez on the other side, who the Jets do everything to make sure that he doesn't have to have the responsibility of the success or failure of the football team. So two different types of approaches, two different quarterbacks. But then again, I thought Peyton Manning was just absolutely his usual self. I mean, he plays at such a high level on such a consistent basis.
Okay, now the NFC Championship game featured Brett Favre, quarterback for the Minnesota Vikings, and Drew Brees, who in the postgame photos I can see is a half a helmet shorter than Brett Favre, the great veteran quarterback. What did you think of that game?
I thought that was an unbelievable football game. It lived up, I believe, to the expectations of a shootout early, and then it settled into a tremendous defensive battle. Robert, I will tell you this. I played 15 years of professional football. I got hurt in 1985. I've been out of the game some 25 years. So if you take approximately 40 years of professional football, I have never seen one man take the beating that Brett Favre took yesterday.
And he's been taking a beating for a long time.
He has been going. I mean, he's 40 years old, and he certainly has nothing to prove in anyone's mind. He's the toughest guy. He's the most entertaining guy. He is everything to this game. I mean, he really has lifted the spirits of professional football on his shoulders this year with everyone rooting for him. Drew Brees, on the other hand, I didn't think played near to the level that we've seen him play all year, in large part because the Minnesota Vikings defense is that good. I thought their receivers were, they had jelly fingers most of the day. I mean, they never really caught a clean ball. I would expect a much better game from the Saints and a much better performance than we saw, even though they won.
Let me just ask you one other question here. Which statement is closer to the truth, since I guess they're both cliches of watching big football games? Number one, the Super Bowl, just another game. They could have played him 5 weeks ago, 6 weeks ago. Or, this is unlike anything else you do. Something is phenomenally different about quarterbacking a team in the Super Bowl.
It is phenomenally different than anything you've ever done. Especially at the quarterback position. The game tends to speed up at each level. I think Mark Sanchez found that out in the game yesterday against the Indianapolis Colts, the young Jet quarterback. He had to get rid of the ball faster. The Super Bowl takes it to another notch. But when it comes to playing the quarterback position, it's an interesting dynamic because what you want to do is, in your mind, the game has to slow down. But basically, you know that everything has to speed up. So it's slow it down in your mind, physically make it move faster. I can tell you that it was the single greatest football moment of my life, having had the opportunity to walk off that football field and know that all that hard work, all the dreams as a young child had now come true. It is not just another football game.
Well, Joe Theismann, thanks a lot for talking with us about football.
Thank you so much.
Joe Theismann speaking with us from Las Vegas. He's now the host of Playbook on the NFL Network.
As in comedy, timing is everything when it comes to politics. The timing this week of a Senate vote on a second term for Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke is creating a headache for President Obama. Bernanke's term expires on Sunday. Mr. Obama wants him to stay on, but some Senate Democrats are balking. As NPR's David Wellner reports, Bernanke's fate could now be up to Republicans.
For many Democrats, it's not easy to embrace the man former President Bush appointed to head the Federal Reserve. But late last week, as more and more of them declared they would not vote for another term for Ben Bernanke, Senate Democratic leaders were pressed by an increasingly worried White House to back him. Number two Democrat Dick Durbin went from being undecided on Bernanke to endorsing him. After meeting with the embattled nominee today at the Capitol, Durbin explained his change of heart.
I thought, Durbin, is this a protest vote? Is that what it's all about? And if that's so, is it sensible? Is it the right thing for us? And I don't think it's the right thing to do from my point of view. I respect my colleagues who see it differently. But I think it's more important for us to make sure that we have his leadership in place. I think the president has made a good judgment.
That Senate Democrats remain divided over Bernanke does not surprise Claremont McKenna political scientist Jack Pitney. He says President Obama put them in a tough position, asking them to reconfirm a man seen as a strong ally of Wall Street, even as the president is distancing himself from Wall Street.
The president is simultaneously trying to appease Wall Street and demonize Wall Street. Politically, that's a very difficult trick to pull off. And a lot of Democrats on Capitol Hill are caught in the crossfire.
At least four Senate Democrats say they'll oppose Bernanke. One of them, Oregon's Jeff Merkley, denounced the Fed chairman on the Senate floor.
He has been at the table of economic policy making in this country for 8 years, when mistake after mistake after mistake has been made. That is how the House was set on fire. And now that it's burned to the ground, we don't need a fireman to rebuild the house. We need a carpenter.
And North Dakota Democrat Byron Dorgan said Bernanke rebuffed him and eight other senators when they wrote the Fed chairman last summer. They demanded to know which investment banks borrowed money, how much, and on what terms, after the Fed opened a brand new loan window for those banks.
And he wrote back to us and said, I don't intend to tell you that. Don't intend to tell the Congress and don't intend to tell the American people. Despite the fact that he said transparency is a big issue for him. Well, apparently not on this issue.
Several senators have holds on Bernanke's renomination, meaning at least 60 votes are needed to bring it up. But not all 60 in the Democratic caucus can be counted on. So some Republican votes will be required. But Claremont McKenna's Pitney says Republicans can't be counted on either.
In a sense, it's a free vote for Republicans. Bernanke was a Bush appointee, but Republicans don't have a whole lot of residual loyalty to President Bush.
Today, Arizona Republican John McCain issued a statement saying he, for one, will vote against reconfirming Bernanke. Here's McCain yesterday on Face the Nation.
I'm very skeptical about his nomination. I'm worried that if his nomination is turned down, the effect that it might have. But the fact is that Chairman Bernanke was in charge when we hit the iceberg, and his policies were partially responsible for the meltdown that we experienced. I think that he should be held accountable.
Other Republicans have also vowed to oppose Bernanke. Still, number two Democrat Durbin says a vote should occur this week.
I haven't predicted with certainty on anything what's going to happen, but I do believe that we're moving forward, and with Republican support, this nomination will be approved.
If so, President Obama would be spared yet another setback. David Wellner, NPR News, the Capitol.
And the U.S. Olympic ski cross team will be officially announced tomorrow. But Madeline, there's another story coming out of this World Cup here in Lake Placid this weekend, and that's the number of injuries during these ski cross races. Yesterday, there were four skiers taken off the mountain on sleds, and that crash that I described in my story, we later found out it was a French skier. He was medevaced out. He fractured a vertebra in his neck, and he does have a spinal cord injury. He could be paralyzed.
And Melissa, what does this mean then for this event at the Olympics?
Well, this World Cup was the last qualifying event before the Olympics. There was a lot of pressure, as you can imagine, on these athletes to do well enough to get a spot on their country's team. Organizers told me this was a challenging course. They knew that. They did hear concerns from coaches, and they made changes to the course to try to make it more safe. And remember, Madeline, they added ski cross, this daredevil sport, to the Olympics to attract a younger audience. And that's a constant balancing act. How do you design a ski cross course that's going to be challenging enough for the best athletes, and where part of the thrill of watching it is knowing that anything can happen, and at the same time, keep the athletes safe?
All right, our own Melissa Block in Lake Placid. And Melissa, we'll hear more from you tomorrow.
That's right.
Melissa Block in Lake Placid. Thank you.
You bet.